The arbiter of baseball pays Redding a visit. Huge throng of enthusiasts at auditorium gives voice to the spirit prevailing in Redding. Speakers arouse great interest in local situation. The baseball spirit in Redding is running high among all classes of people. This was amply indicated in the vast throng who filed into the spacious auditorium on South 5th Street last evening to listen to Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis, High Commissioner of Baseball, and other well-known dignitaries in the game, including John Conway Toole, President of the International League, and the ever-popular Huey Jennings. Although Judge Landis did not touch on the highly important subject of the draft and the new method by which the major leagues hope to handle the leagues which do not recognize it, he delivered a very picturesque address during which he pictured baseball as an organic part of American life and declared that he is giving all of his energy and all of his time to keep it worthy of the place it occupies. He declared that the great crowd gathered at the auditorium to talk baseball in January, splendid testimony to the spirit of sportsmanship among the people of America, and that it is this spirit of sportsmanship which makes life worthwhile in every nook and corner of the country. A few of the speakers declared that Redding occupies a unique position in the baseball world because of the community spirit, which is back of the team, due, they pointed out, to the fact that the club is not privately owned, but belongs to any citizen who has invested or wishes to invest in stock of the association. Never before in the history of the city has there been a meeting of the sort held in the auditorium last evening, and it is safe to say that few gatherings of the kind have been staged anywhere in the country. Spirit ran high, and the speakers were greeted with hearty ovations. In the audience were men from every occupation and every profession, high and low. They drank in every word that was spoken and applauded vociferously the remarks. While they were waiting for the arrival of Judge Landis, they were kept in good humor by Abair S. Ehrmantraut, president of the Chamber of Commerce, and George S. Pomeroy Jr., who led the gang in a number of songs. Spencer A. Abbott, the new manager of the Redding Internationals, declared after his introduction that the crowd gave him the greatest ovation he had ever received off of a ball field.
Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Hey. All right.
We started off well that time.
We're off to a good start. This is your man, Josh, a.k.a. Sweetbread.
This is Matt, a.k.a. Sweetbread. You're bucket foot.
Yes. We are super polished and ready to roll. This is Josh, a.k.a. Bucketfoot.
And this is Matt, a.k.a. Sweetbread.
We should also point out that we only have one microphone working, although we're in a studio with like 100 microphones. We can't get anything to work right. So it kind of feels like we're in an old-timey radio booth. Which I kind of enjoy.
Old-timey baby booth. A baby rainy day.
Booth? You said baby booth.
It's a baby booth on a rainy day, like the tradition calls for.
Oh, you were saying Babe Ruth.
A baby Ruth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what, just anything cool is called.
Anything in 1923 that was cool had Babe and Ruth in the word.
Yeah.
In the title.
So how about that, those throngs visiting Redding? I thought it was so interesting looking at, because we're in the off season here, I should say. It's January.
My favorite time of the year.
Is it?
Yeah, we don't have to talk about baseball games. We can just talk about weird personalities.
Okay. We're going to talk about
the tea kettle.
Yeah, the hot takes. And I was looking through, like, what was being covered in 1923? I like to look through the newspaper archives on the day that we're recording, or this was actually earlier this month. I did a little research. But what stories were being covered in January of 1923? I searched the Pennsylvania archives. That's what we have access to here at our library. And it was like top of the mast, like above the masthead, which is like when like wars happen and stuff. Like the biggest headline you ever saw and like special above the fold, above the masthead, double headline was that Judge Landis was coming to town. Just to give us, it sounds like a fun speech. I mean, people were... What was the word they kept saying? They were the throngs. People were thronging.
They were thronged for Landis. The most powerful man in baseball, possibly the country, possibly the world, was visiting Redding, Pennsylvania.
And he was really not even talking about anything that exciting, it sounds like. It was just like a booster speech.
Business speech. We're going to have a draft. We are going to control the minor league players.
Yeah, so that's interesting. He was talking about the Redding team, and I was like, what Redding team is he talking about? Because we're used to – those of us who live around here know that the Redding AA team called the Fightin' Phils is the Phillies AA team, you know.
The affiliate. They affiliated with – they're owned
through the Phillies. Like the whole minor leagues teams are all affiliated. But it seems to us that back then – the consolidation of the minor leagues was just beginning, but the Redding Phillies were fairly independent. Well, they weren't called the Phillies. They were the Redding They had a couple of different names. They were the Reading
Keystones,
Keystones,
right? But before that, they were called...
I mean, we saw them called the Reading Nationals, but I'm not sure if that's their official name or if that's just like what they were sort of informally known as.
Yeah, it was like every, just about every team, the national team of that city. Yeah.
Pretty much. And then, or referred to the league they were in, although they weren't in the National League. So, but they were the Reading Keystones, and they were also known as the Reading Aces at a point. They were kind of up and down. The one year I saw in 1927, it says, Reading improved to 43-123.
That's still a lot of games, too.
That's 166
games. More
games
than the major league teams are playing.
But also, how do you improve to a 43-123 record?
Yeah.
So you go back a year, they were... played slightly fewer games, but they only won 31.
And correct me if I'm wrong, they played less games in the majors due down, right? They have a shorter season.
They play a shorter season.
So it's the opposite. It's interesting.
But they played 160 games that in 1926. Yeah. They won 31 out of 160. That's really 31 wins, 129 losses. That's so bad. They were 75 games out of first.
Now, I have a question for you. I hate to totally derail this, but what's Berks Nostalgia? Can I get a T-shirt? Is this your personal website?
This is about Berks County. I'm consulting a website about Berks County.
How funny is that? How convenient is that?
John, I should buy a Berks Nostalgia shirt. If you're out there, berksnostalgia.com. Send me a shirt.
Send us both a shirt. XL.
Send us 2XL.
2XL, not 2XL.
2X. Send us 1 4XL. We can wear it together. So 75 games out of first, it says, is the record for number of games in any level of organized baseball that a team finished out of first place. 75 games out. The team that was in first place was the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Mm.
That's crazy. They're not even a baseball team. That's crazy.
No.
How do you come? No, that obviously there was a Toronto team. That must have been why they were the International League. They had some Canadian teams.
Ah, okay. Because we were asking that question off mic earlier.
Yeah. So anyway, that was Reading. That was the excitement in the offseason was Judge Landis coming to town with some of the other big shots to talk about some of the upcoming changes that he was working on, ruling the major leagues and all leagues.
All sports without an S.
With an iron fist. So one thing, it looks like Landis didn't talk about at this meeting, but I found mention of in the same time period. This is from the end of January of 1923. This headline, I mean, what the heck? It says, Landis not in favor of proposed home run zones. Have you ever
What's
heard
a
of
home run zone?
That is the question.
That sounds like cricket or something.
Have you ever heard of a home run zone? You ever hear of it?
I mean, you know, I'm thinking of some wacky game, modern game, but no, I've never heard of that.
Backyard baseball?
Basketball?
The video games? Okay, so Landis pointed out that the national game might be injured if the zoning policy were adopted. So Ben Johnson apparently advocated a home run zoning rule. How would it work? I do not know. But Landis says the fans like the home run.
Yeah. And Ben Johnson, I think, probably was trying to drum up interest.
He clearly lost out. And Landis was saying, like, home runs are what's driving the game's popularity right now. He was right. You know, Babe Ruth was at his heyday. The game itself was unbelievably popular. But he said that there had not been an official meeting with the Joint Rules Committee. So it doesn't really specifically break down how the home run zones would work. This is like a question we'll have to ask.
We have to revisit this in depth.
We'll have to ask the guy who's the official MLB is John Thorne.
Thorne. We'll ask. This will be a Thorne question.
We'll Twitter ask Thorne.
Put it in our Thorne bag.
We'll put it in our Thorne bag. We'll ask Thorne, what was this zone, home run zones that...
Because I can tell you what the home run zone was Johnson. In my dad's backyard.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Sure.
If you hit it off the shed, it was a triple.
I was going to guess the shed. Yes, we're familiar with those. I also
but if it landed on top of the shed, it was a home run.
Yeah, exactly. And this again, just like this article mentions, like this is from Reading too. And the reporter was trying to figure out which hotel he was staying in, and he couldn't find it. He called every hotel in Reading, and Landis wasn't registered at any of them. Like that's how famous he was. He probably was using a fake name.
He probably stayed at like some farmhouse that he just called ahead.
He probably was
telegrammed ahead.
He was on tour.
I'm coming to town. move out of your house.
Yeah.
Let me use your house and farm, because he wanted to stay at an authentic farm.
Yeah.
Because he was, that was his interest.
That was his
interest. Struck him. Good American life.
And also food. It says he noted to the scribes that he was on an eating tour, not a speaking tour.
Right.
That's what it says in the paper. He just wanted to eat his way across America.
Respect the man.
I respect him, no doubt. So the International League was Canadian. Baseball was growing internationally. I mean, it wasn't Canadian, but there was a Canadian team. But the true international scope of the game is something we can discuss, correct?
Yeah, I think so. I forget how I discovered this, but in 1923, there's a pretty significant tour that involved a number of star players. I don't have the list right here, but it included players like Herb Pennock, which we know is a famous pitcher, Casey Stengel. Famous. Okay, so I was a good Yankees pitcher from famous the time. Players. Famous to 1920s Pod baseball famous. Enthusiasts.
Pod famous.
Yes. A one George Kelly, a.k.a.
High Pockets.
Yes. Did I say Casey Stengel? Bibb Falk.
Yeah, Bibb.
The famous University of Texas manager who would go on to win many college championships, conference championships. Herb Hunter, who I guess had been in hot water with Landis in the past, ended up being the manager. This was officially called a tour of Japan. Japan at the time was baseball nuts, as they still are, I think. But
they were that long
ago. That long ago. And a lot of these were fun for players, but they were also money makers for these owners, I think, that put them together. But the real key thing that I wanted to talk about was the 1914 World Baseball Tour, because it is fascinating, Bucketfoot. I mean, this was basically the first world tour of baseball, and it was put together by McGraw and Comiskey, and they left in October of 1913 after the World Series, because the Giants were in the World Series that year. They lost to the Athletics. They were upset by the Athletics. And they didn't get back until March. So it was, was that 4 months, 5 months? They traveled from, I think it was from like Chicago west. They hit a bunch of stops in like Seattle, San Francisco, the West Coast. Again, there was no baseball. Well, there was no high league, professional or there was no like, major league teams west of St. Louis.
Right.
And then they went on to Japan. They went to Hong Kong. They went to Sri Lanka. They went to, do you know what Sri Lanka was called at the time?
I'm going to say Sri Lanka.
Okay. It was called Ceylon. They went to Italy. They went to the Vatican. They visited the Pope. They went to France. They went to England. They played in front of the king. They met the king. And then they came back home. But there were some interesting names that came up in this 1914 World Tour. The first one we talked about a lot, I think, just a few episodes ago. He was famous, but he wasn't a player. And he went along with the teams, kind of as an arbiter.
Huh. One of the umpires?
Yeah. Our boy.
Clem?
The Clemster.
Bill Clem?
The Clemster went on tour.
Wow.
Yeah.
To show off his umpiring skills to the world?
Yeah. And the other person that was very famous at the time, more famous than Ruth, maybe in his time, in some ways, because he was such a worldwide figure, was a Giants player. He went along with his newlywed wife, and he was the biggest attraction.
Who's more famous than Ruth?
And we also talked about him last year.
This is crazy. Don't make me guess. I can't guess anyone more famous, like as big as Ruth.
Well, I'll give you another clue. Just recently, he had some awards restored to him.
Oh, Jim Thorpe.
That's right. Ah. Jim Thorpe.
Wow.
Now, there's one other funny piece of trivia that I wanted to mention. So they took a number of different trains and steamships and everything across the world. When they left England and came back home to America, they were on a ship. Can you guess the name of the ship?
The Titanic.
Well, no. The Titanic had sunk a few years earlier. But this one is almost as famous as the Titanic.
The Proud Mary. Isn't that a ship in a song? Queen Mary?
The Proud Mary. It was the steamship from the CCR song. No.
Steamboat Willie?
The Lusitania.
Oh, wow. The war.
Yeah. Well, I think Lusitania was a passenger ship that was sunk
in the war.
Because I think at the time they were suspecting that they were smuggling war munitions in it. I don't know the exact details.
So they wrote on the ship that was later part of the war.
Yeah. And I guess there's a book out that I'm looking forward to reading on it by a University of Delaware professor that came out a number of years ago. But it's a fascinating story of a bunch of players and their wives and Comiskey and McGraw and a few others that went across the world, but in 1914. And
was when Mo Berg went and was supposedly a spy?
Maybe. I mean, Mo Berg sounds like a spy name.
Do you know that book, The Catcher Was a Spy? I haven't.
Oh,
heard
yeah,
it.
You told me about that. Yeah, yeah. So anyway, this is another one I put on my list now, the 1914 World's Tour. But in 1923... players are going to Japan, and they're, you know, of course, greeted with all sorts of fanfare. And our boy High Pockets is there.
Throngs
of fans. We have Buck O'Neill, the sports writer.
That's Buck O'Neill was the Negro League player,
right?
Same name,
right? Exactly. Probably more famous now, definitely than the sports writer. So, yeah, so that's a little glimpse at the
international scope of the game.
Yeah, the off-season, the international scope. Pretty fascinating stuff. And I think a lot of the players, like I think I mentioned earlier, saw it as a bit of a fun way to kick off steam and travel.
So I was doing, as I like to do, I just like looking through some of the end-of-year stats. Like, I know we're not hewing closely to form. As we were in the beginning of the pod, where we would really go day by day through the season, I was just looking at 1923 as like a whole to try to get some information about it. And I found this player that, like, I honestly can't believe I ever heard of. I'm going to just make you guess. And I guarantee there's no chance you're going to guess who I'm talking about. So this guy, okay, so 1922, he was a rookie. He played 37 games. He was only 22. 1923, he had his first full year with the Cardinals. So I was looking at, like, who had a good 23. So this dude hit 371, 94 RBIs, 34 doubles, 14 triples, 8 homers.
That's a lot of triples.
That's a lot of triples. So he was a good power hitter for the – right? Triples a lot of times had – a lot of guys had more triples than homers at that time. And then – but then a couple years later – so his average dipped a little bit down to 316, but then it it came back up. And then a couple of years later, he had a year where he hit 325, 31 home runs, 42 triples. I'm sorry, 42 doubles, 20 triples, on base of almost 400, and and was voted the league MVP. He had 362 total bases, which led the league. His OPS was over 1,000. And he was a first baseman for the Cardinals, later inducted into the Hall of Fame some years later.
He only played for the Cardinals.
He played his whole career for the Cardinals. And, oh, that's not true. He played for Cincinnati and then the Slobs at the end of his career. But all of his good years were as a first baseman with the Cardinals. From 1922 all the way to 1932, he had a solid decade. He actually did stay in the league for 5 years later.
Wasn't there like a Jack Clark or something?
I mean, Jack Clark was in the 80s.
Yeah, but wasn't there like another Jack Clark that was like a previous Jack Clark?
There's only one Jack Clark. No.
Like a reincarnation. Did I tell you that some people believe that George Sisler, like that Ichiro was an actual reincarnation of George Sisler? That I was reading that? Anyway, so
who
sorry.
Who believes that?
So anyway, Jack Clark was a reincarnation of Jack Clark.
Yeah, I mean, you might be right.
The one author of the one Ichiro book believes it.
That's cool. I like that. I'm even going to show – this is really good podcast.
Give me a clue.
Okay. He has the same initials as me.
JB.
Yeah. There's no way you're going to guess.
I know every Hall of Famer by heart. Come on.
I mean, at least
– No, like, I don't. But, JB?
But we do know the guys.
John.
No.
Jason.
No.
Jeffrey.
No. You.
James.
Yes.
James Buchanan.
We don't know every – Hall of Famer, that it would be impossible. But you would think we would know, guy. Like, he had one of the best all-time stat lines.
James Benny.
And
James.
So his name will cut
I will know his name.
You'll never have heard of it.
Yeah, if he's in the Hall of Fame, come on.
Jim Bottomley.
Of course I've heard of Jim
Bottomley. You've never heard of Jim Bottomley.
Jim Bottom Dollar Bottomley.
His nickname was Sonny Jim.
Of course I've heard of Jim Bottomley.
You've never heard of Jim Bottomley.
Yes.
He wasn't inducted until 1974 with the Veterans Committee. He also had a record that was amazing. He drove in 12 runs in a 9-inning game.
That is pretty amazing. That's got to be the record.
Or it was tied. Mark Witten.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when Mark Witten did that?
Mark Witten.
Hard-hitting Mark Witten?
Yeah.
And then late
he played on that Blue Jays team, didn't he?
I feel like...
He had some light tower power, Mark Witten.
Mark Witten.
Is he the guy that had two... Did he have two grand slams in one game?
It must have been that game.
He had three grand slams in that game.
That was in 93.
We all know that hasn't happened before, but...
He did not have three grand slams.
No, nobody has done that before.
But he did have... He did have 12.
Who would pitch to somebody three times at the bases loaded after they've hit two?
So bottomly, that game went 6-for-6 with 12 ribs. Pretty great.
I can't believe you... Okay.
You've actually heard of this guy?
Of course I've heard of him.
You really have?
I used to read all sorts of obscure craziness.
So did I.
He's not deep down there.
I would have guessed I would have heard of everyone who had some kind of...
I remember Tony Lazzaria had like a really high number of RBIs.
So Bottomley had that game of two homers, three singles, and a double. And seven. And Hornsby was still on that team. But anyway,
That's amazing. Yeah, I mean, there's so many guys out there. We have to look into Bottomley now since he's coming up.
Yeah.
He's coming into his own. He's 1923 is his big first breakout year.
Yeah, and he was only 23 years old at that time. He was a stud.
Do you think they got him for a bottom dollar, the Cardinals?
They got him for a bottom bully. And the Cardinals, spoiler alert, get really good this decade. And he was really one of the leaders of that team.
Yeah, didn't they go over Cleveland? Yeah, they get our man Pete.
They became really good. And then
Elite Pete.
He managed the Slobs for half a year at the end of his career. So,
speaking of the Slobs and speaking of reincarnations.
Yeah.
You asked me about Sisler. We had to talk about Sisler.
I know.
I think my obsession, at least, I don't know about yours, has grown with Sisler over the last couple of years.
If nothing else, more than anyone else, he's like the star of the pod.
Yeah. He has his own sound effect.
The only one. Yeah. Until I had that bottom dollar
Despite Lou's, star status, Sisler's,
Well, we like a
We like a clean-cut gentleman.
We like a clean-cut gentleman, is what I was going to say. we don't like Ruth's roustaboutian ways. We like a clean-cut gentleman. But this is the year where
this is a big year in Sisler's career.
The pod takes a solemn turn.
Yeah, we don't want to give anything too much away. But Josh asked me to look into Sisler injury watch. Maybe this will be a regular
Sisler injury
watch.
I can't even talk about it.
It's so sad.
So
the funny thing is when I first started looking for this, what I kept started and coming up with was a shoulder injury.
Mm.
He actually injured his shoulder.
His throwing arm? His left? I think that's why he stopped pitching. I think that was
possibly
part of it.
In 1922, in like a meaningless game, or maybe it wasn't a meaningless game, but it was. I think they said it was an injury that could have been avoided.
Mm.
One of the articles actually mentioned his running style was impacted by the shoulder injury, and because of that, he got thrown out on a key double play towards the end of the season.
He was
the Giants.
He was very.
They were fighting for the Yankees. They were fighting for the.
He had
the
a lot pennant. Of steals in 22.
Yeah.
He ran with his shoulders.
He was good at everything, including running.
He ran with his shoulders, which was one of the...
Yeah. The article actually said that he couldn't run as fast because he had to keep his arm straight as he ran.
Like straight arm? Like a straight arm. Like football straight arm, like straight out.
Yeah. Just ran like he had a straight jacket on.
Jeez. Imagine how good Sisler would have been with two arms.
So I don't want to get too much ahead of ourselves, but at this point in the season, he's got this shoulder injury. They're looking for understudies for him. There's one guy that they try to hire from Boston. He's all ready to get signed. His wife says, I'm not moving to St. Louis. That gets nixed. But in a month or so, they're expecting him to report to spring training.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out on March 28th, 1923... The news comes out that he's suffering from a sinus infection.
Yeah.
He can't go down to Shreveport. He can't report to minor league. Spring training. But the doctor says he'll be back soon.
Oh, good. I look
just a
forward,
sinus infection.
I look forward to just take some Sudafed, some Wellbutrin. No, that's an antidepressant. Take some Augmentin.
Take some snuff. Get a snuff box.
Clean that out. Smoke one fewer cigars a day. No, Sisler didn't smoke. He was a clean-cut gentleman.
Exactly. Why would he smoke? That was beneath him.
Just a fluke in his otherwise spotless career. All right, good. We'll leave it there.
And the mystery.
We'll leave it there with...
Don't spoil it.
We'll leave it there with a dramatic Sisler watch. You have been listening to This Week in 1920 Baseball. I am Bucketfoot.
And I am Sweetbread. See you later.
See you.